we've got breaking news. Elon Musk reveals major changes coming to Doge.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. Phone lines are open for you at 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110 as everyone kind of piles on today. We have an interesting breaking news item that came out overnight, and this was due to an investor call, is that right, that was happening via Tesla. As we know, Tesla has taken some hits financially and physically over the last few months due to Elon's involvement in President Trump's administration, and we do know that that has caused some negative impact on his business. Now, Elon Musk also has made the statement that soon, and we'll get the exact quotes, but soon he will be taking a bit of a backseat role in Doge, making way for new people to take over as he will spend more time focused on his private business as well. But this is pretty big because a lot of people have been pushing this, and there's obviously going to be a lot of talk of whether this was always the plan. He always talked about he wasn't going to be there for very long, but I think the idea was first he would be there for a year, or maybe 2 years. But now we're talking about only a few months as Doge has really shaken a lot of things up.
Well, and to some degree, this is necessary under law because he is a special government employee. So that is statutory law. He has only a certain amount of time under this category that he is able to be an employee of the government per calendar year. And that's 130 days that he can work for the government while keeping this special status. And really that, because he didn't have to divest of his businesses and things that have contracts with the government, this category is created so that someone can come and do work for the government, but doesn't have to just completely end their entire business career outside. But it's also per calendar year. So next year, he can be a special government employee for a 365-day period and get a new 130 days. So he's obviously, we're not at 100 days of the presidency yet. That comes up in next week on April 30th. But he's exhausted much of this time. And really what he's saying is twofold. One, Tesla, they announced that their net earnings were down 71% in the quarter.
And that is not a small dip. Right. That is not an average dip. That is directly correlated, by the way. That means to not only the tariff situation, not only a lot of things happening, but really what that has to do with is that a lot of people, I believe, my theory is a lot of people who even would support Elon Musk, that would buy a Tesla typically, are now nervous. They don't want their cars destroyed. They don't want their family put in danger. So how do you combat that? It's going to be tough from a business point of view. And look, I was at a drive-thru this morning with my kids getting breakfast, and the car in front of us was a Tesla, and they had a sticker on the back of their car that said, I bought this before Elon went crazy. And my children, specifically my son, who is kind of a tech kid, he loves Elon, doesn't really know anything about the controversial side of him, only knows him from what they've learned in school, which is this is the guy from SpaceX, this is the guy from Tesla, this is the guy who's changing the world with a lot of the technology he's doing. And he saw that, but he also knows about some of his struggles. And he saw that and he goes, that's really mean. And you know, he's almost 13 years old. He goes, also, Elon has autism, so you're labeling somebody crazy. And we know this is what's happening right now, and that's a big topic of conversation. He is someone who has said he has this issue. And then my daughter chimed in behind me and go, yeah, who else is sending people up to get the lost astronauts who have been stranded? Only Elon. And she even said, sometimes it's good to have some people that are a little crazy. And I think that that's true because you have to have big dreamers. You have to be people who can invent and invest and actually spend the money and time to come up with these ideas. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. And I think we've seen success with the concept of Doge. Now it's a question of, can they keep it going? He actually spoke a bit about this more and more. We'll talk about that when we come back, including he said he's hoping that President Trump will listen to his advice when it comes to lowering the tariffs. Okay, so we know there's a little bit of a division there. Phone lines are open for you at 1-800-684-3110. What do you think about this? 1-800-684-3110. We'll be back. We'll continue this conversation, but we also are just a few days left to have your gifts doubled during our Life and Liberty Drive. If you haven't supported the ACLJ, this is a great time to do it as we are about to go to break for just about a minute. And in that minute, that's a perfect amount of time to do it. Scan the QR code, go to ACLJ.org, make your donation today. Welcome back to Seculo. Again, Logan Seculo here. Will Haynes joining us. Phone lines are open for you at 1-800-684-3110. Jeff Balaban from ACLJ Jerusalem is going to be joining us a little bit later, so you want to make sure you stay tuned for that, as this is America's Holocaust Remembrance Day. We're going to talk about some of the news coming out of Israel and, of course, some of the news that's happening right now on the campuses of elite universities, including Yale. And you may have seen some of that overnight. If not, we'll talk about that coming up. But we want to continue the discussion about Elon Musk and include hear from Elon himself about his now what seems to be role shrinking at Doge, saying that Doge's work is largely done. We want to play a bite from Elon?
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and play this. This is actually from that investor call where he was telling the shareholders of Tesla on this call that had just received news of 71% decline in net revenue over the quarter. But this is kind of what laid the pathway. And now we knew that as a special government employee, it wouldn't be something he could do for a full-time job forever, because of any 365-day period, you can only work 130 days to have this status, to not have to divest of things and to make sure that all the ethics rules are carried out, which regard to, if you're a full-time government employee, there are much. So this is him framing where he started and kind of what the future looks like. And there's actually an interesting nugget in here about looking forward as we play this. This is Byte 4 from Elon Musk.
Starting probably in next month, May, my time allocation to Doge will drop significantly. I'll have to continue doing it for, I think, probably the remainder of the president's term, just to make sure that the waste and fraud that we stop does not come roaring back. I'll be allocating far more of my time to Tesla. And now that the major work of establishing the Department of Government Efficiency is done.
So right there, you hear that the major work of establishing
the Department
of Government Efficiency is done, meaning they have the infrastructure now. They have the team in place. We saw that team in that incredible interview with Bret Baier, which kind of completely destroyed the narrative from the media that these are just 20-somethings with laptops and no experience running around, breaking our government, as the media like to show off and say that was happening.
But they said that like it's a bad thing.
Okay? Right.
I like the idea of having a bunch of 20-somethings with laptops actually going in there getting work done. I don't know. They're passionate. They care about it. They actually want to do this kind of work, unlike most government employees that get in there and do that. Obviously, that narrative was not accurate, but that narrative never scared me.
Right.
The narrative that it's young people in tech should not scare you, by the way, because that is who understands what's going on in tech. I have a 13-year-old son who has surely surpassed my knowledge of what's happening in tech, because that's what happens. Okay. It's a moment when you get slapped in the face with it by your own child, when you realize, oh wow, I'm the grown up here who now has not focused on what the growing and changing technology is. It's like the people who talk about AI, you know, they are so scared of it that they're not utilizing it as a tool in their tool belt, and they're going to get left behind. And I really believe that, as much as I understand some of the ethical questions that come into play, everyone's using it as a tool in their toolbox. And if you're not, and if you're just saying, I'm not because I'm a human, I don't deal with this anymore, well, it'd be like saying you're not using a smartphone. It's like saying that you won't have, you know, email on your phone or anything like that. If you're in the tech space, it's ridiculous. Now, that being said, that isn't what was happening with Doge. You had very smart people who were very well experienced in there, including, by the way, the richest man in the world, who has created some of the best technology that all of us use on a daily basis. But no, that guy we have to now portray as some sort of, you know, crazy loony character, so much so that it does look like, and look, I do wish the Trump administration had said this a little bit early on. He's a special position. He can only be here for a handful of months. I know it was talked about, but it wasn't, though, top line.
See, I have to push back a little bit, because they said he's special government employee. That's only 130 days. They even talked about him just kind of ending at the end of this period, but the media didn't. The media actually crafted this narrative that this was an oligarch. You see AOC and Bernie Sanders, though, running around saying stop the oligarchy, as though he had completely commandeered the government and he owned the United States at this point. And it was always a special government employee position. Yeah. Doge itself may not go away because it is now within, they actually were very clever. They used a department that was established under the Obamacare law that created this efficiency network, and they just expanded the mission and goal of it. So it can remain, and these people that are in these positions that can continue the leadership have a vision within the very specific departments. They are very well accomplished, many of them executives in their own right. So even without Elon there working 7 days a week like he has been, him being there and being able to come in a couple times a week, if he reserves a chunk of this year a few times a week, check in, make sure that, you know, his guidance in there, or if they have questions, still exist, that's great. Yeah. But it also, we kind of thought that it was just this first runway here. Yeah. Now he's telling even the investors at Tesla that he is going to remain probably through the presidency using that special government capacity to be able to help make sure everything is going within the vision of President Trump wanting to create more efficiency.
Well, once you've built that team, hopefully it can be self-sufficient. You've built a good team. You don't have to necessarily be micromanaging all of this, especially if you're Elon Musk. He did say, like you said in the New York Times, that he'll go back to maybe 1 or 2 days a week working on the Doge situation. Now, you are going to have a big group on the left that's going to take this as a win. They're going to take this as, we got Elon out. You know, he's gone. We've devalued his company by 70%. Not devalued the company, but the earnings were below 70%. This is going to be taken that way as a win for the left. And you need to make sure that it doesn't happen. Because, look, it's easy, though, to find that narrative. That narrative is very simple because it looks like pressure built and Elon left. It looks like dissension within this administration. And look, we know in the first 100, 150, 250 days of a presidency, there is a lot of disruption happening, whether that's internally, whether that's with the staff, whether that who fits into the right positions, people getting hired, fired. It's just what happens. On the Trump administration, though, it's a bit more front and center because you have these, you want to say, quote unquote, celebrity members of the administration, of the cabinet, that have a lot more attention, that already have millions and billions of dollars and millions of social media followers, where typically, let's say this was the original Department of Government Efficiency you said that the Obama administration was able to create. Who ran that? Nobody knows. Okay,
someone that was unelected, I guarantee you that, because that's how
but
bureaucracies
it's Elon
and agencies
Musk,
work.
It's news, and not that it shouldn't be. He is, look, and I'm not saying that he is some like innocent guy over here. He certainly likes to fire people up. He is certainly a bit of a troll online, but is a name that everyone knows and has known for a very long time. So whether this was normal that he should be stepping aside here at this point, I think we have to make sure that narrative gets out there as well, because I'll take it as a win.
Well, and here's the two narratives they're pushing right now. One is what we said is that this is from the New York Times. As Mr. Musk moves to spend less time in Washington, it is unclear whether his audacious plan to overhaul the federal bureaucracy will have lasting power. Wall Street Journal, Elon Musk's controversial role at the White House is expected to diminish in coming weeks, a change that risks undercutting his Department of Government Efficiency, but isn't likely to stop its work outright. So one, that's the first narrative you're going to see. Without him there, how will it ever continue, even though that was always the plan and it was stated? But then the second one is going to be like, well, he didn't also meet his goals. He wanted $1 trillion cut within this period already. It's only been hundreds of billions. You know why? Because they sued him every time that they cut something. They sued the government. And that's why we're involved in multiple of these lawsuits, filing briefs there to say, let them do the work. And instead, they're going to try to frame this as a win that he's not that efficient. He couldn't cut that much. It's like, no, they sued him.
And you've worked in the government. And you've worked in D.C. You understand how things get done. And sometimes they get done in a very frustrating way. Sometimes they do get done in a way that you would never run your business this way. So I'm sure there's also some of Elon Musk going in here. Yes, he wanted to cut $1 trillion. And if he was running a regular business where you could actually go in and do some of these things, he could probably got it done. Probably could have got it done rather quickly. I'm curious his thoughts after being in for a number of months, what it really feels like. Because I think there's a lot of hoopla that goes into running to a campaign, to understand the campaign. And the campaign and the administration are very different things.
Right.
A campaign is created by this team. But then an administration is not only created by that team, but also has everyone else in the government you got to rely on and talk to. And you have all of these good and bad checks and balances that, but all the good and bad red tape, mostly bad. So I am curious of his thoughts now, being like, maybe it's just, hey, like Rick Grenell said, I want to be in Washington, D.C. the least amount of time as I can. So phone lines are open for you. I'd love to hear from you. What do you think? 1-800-684-3110. CeCe Heil, Jeff Balaban will be joining us coming up a little bit later on from ACLJ Jerusalem to give you an update on what's going on in Israel and on our college campuses right now. And if we're talking about billions and billions of dollars, of course, we should be talking about those elite universities. We'll continue that conversation. But also, we're going to have an update on some of our pro-life battles coming up in the next segment, including that one where they were telling our nation's military, hey, watch out for domestic terrorism, aka pro-life grandmas. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Seculo. Again, like I said, later on in the show, we're going to be joined by Jeff Balaban from ACLJ Jerusalem. And I'd love to get you on hold right now to take some calls a little bit later in the show as well at 1-800-684-3110. We're going to be taking those towards the end of the show, so you can get on hold and stay on hold, and we'll get to you a little bit later. Of course, we're still talking about the news coming out of the Department of Government Efficiency. Just to give you a heads up, because I know a lot of people just joined us. We had a little glitch on YouTube and some of the others. Elon Musk said in his investor call with Tesla, hey, I'm going to be scaling back my work with Doge. It should be wrapping up next month. And now he's saying maybe a day or two a week he'll be working full-time on Doge. As Tesla's earnings have taken quite a hit, he needs to focus some more time on Tesla. And like I said earlier, I think that that's something that the American people need to kind of decide what they want to do, because I think a lot of people would have purchased a Tesla, maybe even in support of Elon Musk, if it wasn't for the fact that they took it to such an extreme and the violence started happening, so much so that people have to put stickers on their cars saying, you know, I don't support Elon, or Elon is crazy, or all of those things that now they're having to do to their own vehicles. But also, I wanted to draw a little bit of attention to some of the work of the ACLJ and what we're doing. You may have remembered that many years ago at this point now, or maybe a year ago,
right?
We uncovered a shocking fact, and we got it confirmed, that they were showing in these sort of presentations to our military personnel training seminars, these slides. And these slides would say, here are terrorist groups to watch out for. And of course, you'll see in big, bold ones, pro-lifers, the National Right to Life, Operation Rescue, people that have the Choose Life license plate. These are the people they need to be worried about. That's who they need to be scared that they may be coming after. Of course, they also threw in there people like PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, which, by the way, look, they've been known for disruption. But would I label PETA largely as a terrorist organization? Absolutely not. But of course, they have to label pro-lifers in there. And we found out, not only confirmed that it was real, we got a lot more information, and now we can do something about it.
That's right. So at first, when this was brought up, the military kind of said this was not proper vetting for this. We issue an apology. We're not going to continue this particular curriculum. And we were, one, pleased that they were acknowledging it, confirming that it was real and would stop that. But then we, through our FOIA practice here at the ACLJ, were able to get the investigation document. And we told you about this last week, and the investigation document showed that the soldiers that were interviewed were very concerned, really, with the way it was presented. Some were saying, no, they were hostile against these groups. They were saying that these are terrorist groups you have to look out for. But the top line, the bottom line up front, bluff, as they call it in military speak, right there, is that that really it was just a mistake, because it had the heading terrorist groups, and the military doesn't believe they're terrorist groups, and so it shouldn't have been labeled that way, but not that it shouldn't have been included in the presentation. Well, now that opens up a whole new can of worms, as they say, that when the military said it just wasn't properly vetted, but the investigation is saying something different, we know there's a concern here. So now that we have new leadership, we don't have Secretary Lloyd Austin, who is either at Department of Defense or not at Department of Defense, depending on if he's told the president he's not there for that week. We have new leadership at the Department of Defense. This is Secretary Pete Hegseth. And so what are we doing? Sending a letter directly to him. And this says, as well,
by the way, unlike previous administrations, it's going to get to him.
Right.
We know he's going to see it.
Right. So this is going
worst case scenario, someone will text it to him.
Secretary Hegseth, as well as the Secretary of the Army, and it lays out the Army's violation of Operation Rescue's First Amendment rights. Not only are we advocating to generally get this awareness and get this change, but we represent Operation Rescue, which if you show that slide again, they were specifically targeted in this training slide. As one of the terrorist groups, Operation Rescue, an organization the ACLJ has stood by and defended legally
for decades.
And so we bring that up, that the Army has violated their First Amendment rights. And then it goes over kind of the concerns with the original response and then what we found out. So now we're asking the boss to do something about this, both the Secretary of the Army and the Secretary of Defense. And here's what we are asking. As we advise Secretary Warmoth, a statement indicating that some officials failed to properly vet a slide is not enough, especially when considering these unlawful actions have occurred for years. And now, having obtained the investigation file, the situation became much worse, along with the need for rectification. The situation described herein is serious, and it impacts the First Amendment is grave. It injures the right of our client and threatens those Americans to engage in free political advocacy without fear that they will be made a target of the United States Army operations. So when you put it in that context of how grave these violations are, and we're going to someone who now leads the Department of Defense, who has been trying to get the woke and left ideology out of the military, this is a very good time for our client and for pro-life advocates everywhere that we can see something real change. And we ask for a meaningful and direct apology from the Army, for a public statement, or at least one addressed to all trainees, that the U.S. military considers pro-life Americans and organizations neither terrorists nor extremists, and that all prior training to the contrary is false. And then we want the Army to be directed that the immediate production of all remaining Army records concerning this subject be provided to us, as well as address Congress's concerns, because many members of Congress got on board with this as well, by issuing a new statement that rectifies and replaces the prior misleading representations. Now, this isn't normally one that in the past 4 years, you send this and you just hope you make a difference when sending it to the top.
To the right person.
This is going to the right person. Well, this is going to the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of Army.
Yeah, I think we're
going to
get some real answers and we get some real action. And I think it's going to happen. And I believe that's because of people like you also who have been supporting this cause for so long and have said, we are going to stand up for the rights of pro-lifers who are, whether they're on the street, you know, protesting, if you will, or even those that are just sidewalk counselors. You know, the protesters kind of still exist, but that was more in the 80s. Now we're talking about people that are there to think, to pray, to talk to people who are potentially going in to abortion clinics and discuss their options, trying to give them real options. But either way, it's free speech and you're on a public sidewalk, something like that. The ACLJ has been there for them the whole time, or whether they're being targeted by their own nation's military for just having a belief that the unborn should have the chance to be born. It's as simple as that. I want to encourage you as we head into break to give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. We're going to head over and talk to Jeff Balaban from ACLJ Jerusalem in the next segment. And then we're going to take all the calls we can. And a lot of you are commenting right now also about the Elon Musk situation. I encourage you to call in about that. We can keep that conversation going as well. But right now, if you have the opportunity, we only have 6 days left during our Life and Liberty Drive. This is a great time to give. I know that you've heard me say it, maybe ad nauseum if you're a regular listener, that if you're brand new, maybe you've supported this show, maybe you've watched this show for years, and you've never made a donation. Maybe you've followed our legal work for years, decades, and you never made a donation. Well, now it's time to do it. I'm going to encourage you. Go to aclj.org or scan the QR code on your screen. When it comes to babies and supporting the babies' lives, we're talking about supporting pro-lifers. We're talking about supporting pro-life pregnancy centers that are providing free baby supplies, things like that to expected mothers. Not just you know, prenatal. We're talking about a lot of these offer postnatal care, a lot of options that they have depending on the server, and they were trying to be shut down nationwide. There's only 6 days left to have your gift doubled. We want to be there for them and be there for you. Go to aclj.org. We'll be back in less than a minute. Stay tuned.
We'll be right back. keeping you informed and engaged. Now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome back to Seculo. For those just joining us now, we did want to give you a bit of an update of what's going on. Also, President Trump just put out a statement on Truth Social. He's actually having a press conference right now saying that later today, I'll read it to you, later today I'll be meeting with, of all people, he said that, not me. This is word for word, okay? Later today I'll be meeting with, of all people, Jeffrey Goldberg, the editor of The Atlantic and the person responsible for many fictional stories about me, including the made-up hoax on Suckers and Losers and Signalgate, something he was somewhat more successful with, in quotes. Jeffrey is bringing with him Michael Schur and Ashley Parker, not exactly pro-Trump writers either, to put it mildly, exclamation point. The story that they are writing, they've told my representatives, will be entitled The Most Consequential President of This Century. I'm doing this interview out of curiosity and as a competition with myself, just to see if it's possible for The Atlantic to be truthful. Are they capable of writing a fair story on Trump? The way I look at it, what can be so bad? I won. So, I think the big takeaway from that, other than, of course, this is President Trump's kind of ridiculous, hilarious, over-the-top writing, is he's going to be sitting down and meeting with and having an interview with Jeffrey Goldberg, person that was involved in that whole signal situation with Pete Hegseth. But also, this also shows, again, the narrative of people getting kicked out of the press room and not being talked to, that they're bringing alternate press in, they're bringing podcasts in. Yeah, some of that is true, but it's not like you saw the Biden administration, you know, going and having a lot of interviews with people who are unfriendly to them.
Right.
That was never happening. I barely did interviews to begin with. So now you have a controversial situation, and President Trump's going to make news again by jumping in and having this interview with Jeffrey Goldberg. What do you think about this tactic? I want to hear from you at 1-800-684-3110. Is this smart? Is it smart to always get involved? Is it smart to always make comments? Or you know what? Is it better for people like Jeffrey Goldberg to put out their articles in The Atlantic and probably no one who supports President Trump would read it anyway?
Yeah, and that is kind of the point as well, is that you bring up the new media issue and how the old guard, the establishment media, the mainstream media loses their mind over, and they're like, how dare you have someone in the press pool that's wearing a beanie, and this is so ridiculous. But at the end of the day, what President Trump did very well in the last election cycle was understood that if you go to where people are actually watching and listening, they respond well. The difference is they are so self-righteous that many of these magazines and newspapers that they believe they are the only guardian of truth. In reality, they are the only guardian of their bias. And when you see them lose their mind over having new media there, it's like, well, who's gonna fact check him? Who's gonna go here and there? Where were you fact checking when President Biden was unable to be president? He was unable to run for president. And you had the Jake Tappers of the world say, this is so ridiculous that they're talking about this. He is fit to run, never better,
and then wrote
can't believe it. And then turn around and writes the book on how he was. It was the greatest cover-up of all time. Yeah. It's because you don't believe what's right in front of your eyes because of your own bias. Maybe that's why no one's reading you, subscribing to your newspapers, or watching your shows.
More people are going to be going to see this article now than ever before. I mean, I understand. I don't think I've ever visited The Atlantic's website. I will certainly be reading this because now it's interesting. So President Trump just provided probably a lot of ad revenue to The Atlantic. So you got to think about it those ways, too. The business decisions here, I don't know.
I used to be a subscriber. I know this comes to no shock to you because I read lots of things, yeah. So I can be informed on what I need to talk about. But I continued that subscription way longer than I should have because every year they were like, $1 the whole year. You won't even miss a dollar.
Yeah.
You can keep getting The Atlantic. And so finally I'm just like, I need that
Not
dollar.
Not even a dollar. You take that dollar back.
Yeah.
Put it to something worthwhile. Maybe you want to support the work of the ACLJ with that $1. $1 right now becomes two. Because we're doing our match right now.
That's 2 years of The Atlantic.
That's two. Yeah, exactly. 2 years of The Atlantic for just $2. Right now, though, I encourage you to go support the work of the ACLJ. We're going to get back. We're going to talk about what we're doing with ACLJ Jerusalem, what's going on in Israel. And I know Israel's in the news right now a lot, specifically in the conservative sphere, as we have seen a turn against Israel. We need to make sure we stand up for them. It's been a hallmark of the ACLJ and will continue to be. We'll be right back. back to Seculo. Jeff Balaban's going to be joining us in just a little bit from ACLJ Jerusalem. But before that, I want to take some of your calls. And phone lines are open for you right now. So maybe when we go to Greg here, that's going to influence you to call because we got a few lines open. So it's a perfect time to get on hold. 1-800-684-3110. Everyone likes to be on hold, Will. It's a thing. Let's go to Greg, who's calling from Arizona. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is correct. I just think you should rename Elon Musk's troops the Musketeers.
That's pretty funny, Greg. I think that there's a lot of people who do find, obviously, his candor, the way he speaks and all that, it's sometimes controversial, for sure. Has he put his foot in his mouth a few times? Absolutely. Are we willing to accept that from people who are providing so much to this country and so much to the world? I think the answer is probably yes when you have something like Starlink, when you have SpaceX, when you have Tesla, when you've had like PayPal and eBay, all of these things that he has been involved in with over so many years as those companies have been acquired and all that. A lot of those foundings, if you look at who originally started them, a lot of them were Elon and Peter Thiel and some of these other people that are now in this sort of conservative space. Stuff that people use every day. The electric car was controversial. A lot of people still don't like it. But you know what? He was the leading name in it for how many years? You always knew Tesla was it. That is, if you were going to get an electric car for many years, that was your really only option. And everyone else followed suit. SpaceX, same thing. SpaceX had to essentially take over NASA in terms of the way that they get people to space, where they're able to do it. Sure, you have an Amazon version, a Jeff Bezos version with your Katy Perry's and your William Shatner's going up to space for a few minutes. All that's great. I'm glad all that exists, by the way. I'm glad space exploration is still on the horizon. However, they want to take him down because they don't like really the way he speaks.
Right. And you mentioned someone putting their foot in their mouth and, you know, they make a big deal about it. That's called Washington. I mean, every single politician says something that they end up regretting. That's the nature of being in front of cameras all the time. And you know what? Both sides capitalize on it. That is kind of the nature of the game. But what is different here is that they have taken statements they don't like or actions they don't like and made him into such a villain that you're seeing literal terrorism against his business. You are seeing people firebomb, randomly attack strangers by keying their cars or yelling at them for owning a vehicle. You are seeing dealerships absolutely terrorized with Molotov cocktails and things of that nature. That's where it's different.
Yeah.
Attacking people for saying something that they regret or saying something inartfully, that is the nature of Washington. Yeah. We call it out when we see the Democrats or the left do it and say things that they regret, even many times people on the right, but then vice versa. They're doing that all the time. But what it shouldn't lead to is violence against them.
Yeah, I don't want to act like we are condoning a lot of the rhetoric he said. He has said some very controversial things. Do I think they're taken out of context? Do I think sometimes that they are controversial and then he has to walk them back? Sure. But when you're talking about, you call him a Nazi, you start spraying swastikas on Teslas. But on the other hand, we know what's going on our college campuses. We see what's actually happening. Real anti-Semitism that is happening at Yale. This is happening right now. Again, you may think this is old news, something you saw last year. Logan, you're playing a replay. But no, this is happening right now on our college campuses.
That's right. And as we look at this, you see the way that language has been weaponized once again against the Jewish people. And you see this as a scenario that is growing. It is boiling over. You see the lawsuit with that Harvard has now put against the Trump administration, saying you can't take our funding away. But once again, this is rhetoric from the left that is going to a level of leading to violence and leading to protesting and pushing back, and not just protesting, it's leading to violence.
All right, let's take another phone call. Let's go to line one. Josh is calling from Oklahoma on line one. Josh, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I was just calling in regards to the situation with the Army having the training videos labeling the pro-life people terrorists. As far as I was concerned, I was in the Army in the early 2000s, and there was an oversight regulation that kept U.S. military personnel from collecting on U.S. citizens. And there's also an Army regulation that covers Posse Comitatus, and that is another thing that keeps military from using any type of civilian and law enforcement.
Hey, and I was just, Josh, it's great questions because, yes, you are 100% correct on what you're talking about as far as the military being able to do action against the United States. The part of this training was for the emergency services of the base. It was basically protecting against potential attacks against that base. And much of the training was what they should receive, because what are U.S. bases a target for? Jihadi terrorism against them. So those people that are in the emergency services and that are there doing providing the base security on U.S. soil, they're not going out and doing this issue with, like, sending the troops to go investigate terrorism or to look at Americans. The entire point was what to be aware of, what to know for, to keep the base safe. You've seen Islamic terror against U.S. bases in the United States. You've seen Fort Hood. You've seen situations like this. That is an appropriate training.
Yeah, people have been
but
radicalized.
For some reason, swept up into this as if pro-life Americans are going and attacking military bases.
And we're talking about, again, they're labeling things like, do you have the license plate from your DMV or from your, you know, that says choose life on it. And I've met a lot of people who have that. Those are not the most militant people in the world. They don't seem like pretty violent people who have that. There's a lot of you watching right now on social media, watching on YouTube and Rumble and Facebook. If you're watching on YouTube and you've never seen us before and you're brand new here, you may hear me in just a minute say support the work of the ACLJ, do all that. Well, if you're brand new and this is new to you, we know only about 50% of the people that watch actually subscribe. I'm going to ask you to subscribe to the channel right now. Over 470,000 of you have subscribed on YouTube alone, 200,000 plus on Rumble. So right now, if you could, hit that subscribe button. While you're there, hit the thumbs up. Know how much we'd appreciate it and know how much that does to spread this message out there around the world. We always hear from people who talk about the work and we see it, but now we are actually able to get into action. The ACLJ is more than just a broadcast, but it is a big part of the entire mission that we have here is to spread the word as well. So you got to be advocating not only in the courtrooms, but also for the hearts and minds of people in the court of public opinion. Right now, though, phone lines are open for you too, because there are thousands of you just alone watching, millions listening on radio and throughout the country, throughout the world. Maybe you haven't decided to give us a call. Maybe you have some thoughts. I'd love to hear from you. I know Will would love to hear from you. If you can do it right now, I encourage you. 1-800-684-3110. We got a lot of lines open right now. It's a great time to call.
And we will be joined by Jeff Balaban in this next segment where we are going to discuss this issue with what's happening at Yale. He is a Yale alumni. He has been in discussions all morning with what's happening because, as you saw, there was an encampment started on the campus, a new one. And there was
a
crazy video where even Jewish students were trying to walk through campus and they said, you have to go around. And they're like, but you're letting other people go through. No, you have to go around. And as a Yale alumni, he's been talking with other alumni and other people about the leadership and what's going on there. As we see all of these Ivy League institutions with such a spotlight on them, are they doing the right thing? Are they making the proper changes to keep people safe, or are they just trying to pump the brakes enough to not be the worst of the Ivy Leagues?
Yeah, and that's what's happening right now. Again, this is happening today. This wasn't something you heard from a year ago. It's not going to be covered as much on the mainstream media because, you know what? They kind of got over it. Also, you're seeing some pretty disturbing attacks on people that support Israel right now, even from the conservative media, maybe the alt-right media, if you will. And I understand there's conflicts there. People have disagreements, and I have no problem. I'm not calling for anyone to be censored. I'm not calling for anyone to be shut down. But I do think that that is strategically planned, and we have to make sure that the ACLJ, and we're still there, and other people are still there, supporting the state of Israel, still supporting the Jewish people in this country, and we can't do that without you. It's why we have an ACLJ Jerusalem. Understand that. This is the ACLJ Jerusalem. That is the American Center for Law and Justice in Israel. We have a European center, but it's different. European Center, we are there to fight for the rights of Europeans like that are like-minded, who also need our support, whether that's the UN or the European Union. But the Jerusalem office is specifically for American values and for American support of those in Israel. So I encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ as we head to a break. Jeff Balaban's going to be joining us from ACLJ Jerusalem. He runs it. It'll be great to have him on the broadcast today. But I'm going to encourage you right now to spend some time. Go to, give us a call if you would like to, but really, support the work of the ACLJ. There's only 6 days left to have your gifts doubled. Please give now. Go to aclj.org, scan the QR code that's on your screen. We have immense legal work coming, whether that's in Israel or whether that is to help save the lives of unborn babies that require significant resources. We are battling the juggernaut of the abortion industry always. It's like a David and Goliath story. You can be a part of it. Right now, take a second. Consider supporting the ACLJ right now. Go to aclj.org, scan the QR code that's on your screen. We'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Seculome. We are joined in this final segment of the broadcast by Jeff Balaban of ACLJ Jerusalem. And Jeff, this is something you and I, we talked on the phone last night about. We're at this point where this could almost be seen as a rerun to many people if they're just tuning in, because you're seeing a new encampment pop up on an Ivy League university and imagery that is literally chilling. When I watched the video of what the encampment looks like, but then also there's a video I described earlier where a Jewish student that has a yarmulke on goes up and is trying to cross campus. They are told by people that are, clad in a keffiyeh, hiding their face, you know, symbols of terrorism. And they're told, you have to go around. He's like, I'm a student here. I can't walk through campus. You're letting other people walk through campus. They say, no, you have to go around because he is visually wearing a Jewish religious piece of clothing. You know, they are targeting someone for being Jewish on campus. But you're a alumni of Yale, and we've had you on to talk about this topic often with many of these schools, but this one has to hit a little bit differently when you're seeing it, especially after all the progress that at least the administration has made pushing back in just these, 90 some odd days. You're seeing a new encampment pop up on your former alma mater.
Right, William. Sure, this is painful, and honestly not surprising. I will tell you that there has been a raging debate that I am part of internally, in terms of Yale alumni and current students, as to whether, for example, Yale took a step recently where they said that Yalees for Palestine will no longer be, considered a valid group on campus, but specifically because Yalees for Palestine had violated directives repeatedly and were told and cautioned related to keeping the peace there. Yeah, there's the student Netanel, who's been on air now. And the only reason they seem to be targeting him for this, while they chant genocidal slogans about the Jews, right, wearing a keffiyeh, which is the essential equivalent to a swastika, as a symbol that means violence against Jews, genocide of the Jews. And they lock there, self-righteously chanting on the Yale campus, where this fellow student can't walk through because he's wearing a yarmulke. Now, they don't know what his views are about Israel. He's not an Israeli. And even if he were, this would be inappropriate. This is simply targeting a Jew for being a Jew. And it is very painful. The fact that Yale took a step of saying this group will no longer be permitted and disbanding, there's a debate. Are they doing the righteous thing? Well, if they are, then there's a whole litany of things that they have been doing which is not righteous that we have not seen any evidence they're trying to fix. Or are they just nervous in the way when, in the middle of beating someone in a dark alley and all of a sudden the police lights start flashing up the alley and you run? Or maybe it's somewhere in between. This is the debate. To me, they continue to have, and this is not so public, they hired someone for the chaplain's office as a Muslim chaplain to work directly with students who had shortly before that, post October 7th, signed onto a letter calling for genocide openly. And Yale has refused to let her go. There's a professor on campus who supports Hamas openly and vocally, remains there, coddled there. This encampment didn't spring up overnight. This encampment is a result of years and years of normalizing this kind of Jew hatred. And so there needs to be a more fundamental change. And frankly, if the reaction is because the Trump administration and the new Washington Congress are willing to take, you know, hold them to account, then good, they should. I will set out, just sorry, end this little monologue with this, because this is part of the internal debate. People may want to be loyal to Yale, but the Yale motto, people should know, is for God, for country, and for Yale. And when Yale has lost God and country, then it's no longer the Yale that should be supported, and in fact, to be brought back to its greatness, because it was once great, and there are still great students and faculty there. We need to be reminded that there have to be things first, like God and country.
And Jeff, you did mention that they're taking away the recognition of the Yalees for Palestine, which is the Students for Justice in Palestine chapter on Yale. We know the issues with that group on many college campuses. They are a proxy for Hamas. They, in some cases, had what seemed to be foreknowledge of the October 7th attack when they restarted social media accounts and said, stay tuned, we're back. This isn't a good group in that this is who organizes on campus, but the right step here of taking their charter away from the school is a positive thing. But what the kind of the debate we're talking about, and obviously is going on these college campuses as well, is that it almost seems to me, and this is my opinion, that the Ivy League schools right now, instead of trying to protect their Jewish students and have real academic freedom and open debate, are just trying to pump the brakes enough to not be the worst of the Ivy League schools. That Harvard obviously has the big target on their back right now because of the $2 billion in funding. You know, Columbia pumped the brakes enough so that they didn't lose $400 million in funding. Yale, let's get rid of Students for Justice in Palestine on campus so we're not worse than Harvard right now. That it's this race to be second. If we can be just bad enough to be the second most anti-Semitic school, we're good because then the spotlight's not on us. Now, that's the cynic in me, but that's what it feels like because no one's really doing real reform on these campuses to protect people.
Well, William, I'd say that's the realist in you. By the way, I'll mention the institutions you mentioned. They're all personal to me. I have a son who went to, I went to Yale Law School. I have a son who went to Columbia Law School. I have a son-in-law who went to Harvard Law School. So these are all like directly in the family institutions where, and of course, there were problems even when I was there a long time ago, but they were not nearly, I mean, what's happened since October 7th boggles the mind. But these problems have been mounting over time. I tend to agree with you. I think there are certainly people of goodwill in the Yale administration. But I think overall that, and we've seen this at ACLJ, that's the thing, at the ACLJ, because we represented students and faculty at so many of these institutions, we see sometimes it is a matter of guiding them and helping them because there's ignorance. They don't understand that what they're doing is wrong, whether it's the way they're treating Jews or Christians. Sometimes it is worse than that. Sometimes it's intentional because there's another set of ideas that have been pushed through. It's a very complex situation here, but I personally tend to agree that what we're seeing here is a reaction. And by the way, to be not as horrible as other horrible institutions is not a standard that we should accept. This is all of this behavior, all of this is so far beyond the pale of what should be acceptable behavior in institutions like this in America and institutions that take government money, that taxpayers support, that I believe that, yes, we should acknowledge when these institutions make good decisions, and we should explain to them how far they still have to go to get anywhere near normal, anywhere near decent and moral, and anywhere near acceptable.
Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today. And we will not stop shedding light on this and pointing out the evil that's happening on these college campuses. And also know that our work goes on behind the scenes on this as well. Jeff, while being ACLJ Jerusalem director, also helps with things at home, these domestic issues, as we look to help students get their education and not have their lives at risk. I mean, that is what it comes down to. And so that work is very important. And when you support ACLJ, you support all of those efforts as well. But we also are sending that letter to the Secretary of Defense today about how the Army was targeting pro-life Americans with their training, calling them terrorists. We're not going to let that stand either. We have a lot going on and we can't do any of it without you. Go to aclj.org, have your donation doubled as this Life and Liberty Drive comes to a close in just a few days, we need your support, ACLJ.org.